Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Okay, let's dive in. It's kind of wild when you think about it. Imagine trying to find, I don't know, gold, maybe. But instead of panning in a river like everyone else, you're using these super advanced math formulas, stuff nobody thought was even relevant.
Right.
That's pretty much what Jim Simons did. He was this brilliant theoretical mathematician, never even took a finance class, and his team, scientists, mathematicians, zero Wall Street background.
It sounds completely backwards, doesn't it?
Totally. But this crew at Renaissance Technologies, they didn't just dip their toes in the market. They turned it upside down, consistently beating the biggest names out there.
Yeah, forget the hot tips and gut feelings. This was pure brain power, a totally unconventional approach, like they were trying to find the market's secret map, its El Dorado.
What really grabs you is that contrast, isn't it? You've got people thinking in these really abstract ways, pure math, science. Fields that seem totally disconnected from, you know, making money in stocks.
Absolutely. They don't just participate. They fundamentally change the game. It makes you wonder, where does real expertise actually come from? Sometimes it's from the outside, apparently.
Exactly. And understanding how they pulled off this, well, improbable success really comes down to Gregory Zuckerman's book, The Man Who Solved the Market.
Ah, yes. A great source.
Our listener who suggested this has great taste. This book is packed. So our mission here is to pull out how Simons, coming from such a non-traditional place, built this powerhouse firm.
All based on math models and automated systems, right?
Yeah, cold hard math, trying to like decode the market's logic, not just guess.
You know, connecting this to innovation more broadly, Simons' story really questions that whole idea of needing to be deeply in a field to shake it up.
Right. Conventional wisdom says you need the experience.
Exactly. But maybe sometimes that fresh perspective combined with a powerful toolkit from somewhere else entirely, that's what unlocks the big breakthrough, stuff the insiders might just miss.
And Zuckerman really went deep. It wasn't just a quick look. He did, what, over 400 interviews?
Yeah, including, I think, more than 30 people from Renaissance, current and former.
Which is amazing given how secretive they are. Even Simons himself, who was initially against the book, eventually talked to Zuckerman.
That level of access is key, isn't it? It gives you a real peek behind the curtain.
Definitely. Persuading those insiders, despite the firm's, you know, legendary secrecy, it says a lot about the story's pull.
And Simons being reluctant at first, that just shows how much they guarded their secrets, their edge.
So for you, the learner listening in.
Yeah.
Why spend time on this? Well, it's not just a cool finance story. It's got real insights, I think, about challenging how things are normally done.
Mm-hmm. It's a great case study in interdisciplinary thinking.
Totally. Seeing how math, physics, computer science, how those ideas could conquer Wall Street. You get these real aha moments. And don't worry, we'll break down the complex stuff. No crazy jargon.
Yeah, we'll keep it clear. Think of it like getting the inside scoop without needing a PhD in math.
And the beauty is it applies broadly, right? It makes you think differently about solving problems in your own life, your own job.
Absolutely. How can you use unconventional tools or look at things from a different angle? What assumptions are holding you back? Simon's journey is, well, it's powerful food for thought, whatever you do.
Okay, so let's rewind a bit. Jim Simons' background. Not Wall Street. He was this top-tier mathematician, right? And a codebreaker during the Cold War at the ADA, the Institute for Defense Analyses.
Yeah, a serious academic and government scientist type.
Even back then, his mind was just elsewhere. Zuckerman tells this great story about him getting arrested for a pile of unpaid parking tickets.
Huh, really?
Yeah, it just shows someone so lost in thought in these big intellectual problems that everyday stuff like parking tickets just didn't compute.
That's actually really telling. It highlights how removed he initially was from, you know, practical commercial things. His passion was solving puzzles, cracking codes, not the bottom line.
It makes his later success seem almost accidental, driven purely by applying that unique brain power to a new puzzle, the market.
Right.
But the market puzzle did eventually catch his eye. He had this early idea, way ahead of its time, for a company called R to trade stocks electronically.
Oh, interesting. I didn't realize it was that early.
Yeah, he even got his boss at Stony Brook University and the IDA's best programmer involved. But then, and this is almost comical, they left the business plan on a Xerox machine.
No, seriously.
Seriously. And ultimately, he couldn't get the funding. R didn't ever happen.
Wow. So close, yet so far. It shows that brilliance isn't always enough, right? You need timing, resources, maybe not leaving plans on the copier.
Mm, probably helps. But crucially, like you said, the failure didn't kill his interest. He just went back to his math research, working on minimal varieties. Shows his focus.
But that market fascination stuck around. He and his IDA colleagues started thinking about a third way to look at markets.
Different from the usual fundamental analysis company, health, earnings, that stuff.
Right. And different from traditional technical trading, just looking at charts for patterns.
This third way was all about math, scientific tools, finding signals for where the market might go.
Exactly. Not necessarily understanding why it moved, but finding statistical clues that could predict that it would move. A bit like forecasting weather, maybe. Using models without knowing every single molecule's path.
That's a good analogy. It was a fundamental shift. They were treating the market like a giant data set, like the code-breaking data they were used to.
They figured beneath all the noise, the random-seeming price jumps, there might be patterns. Real, exploitable patterns you could find with serious math.
Which was pretty radical then compared to the story-driven way most people invested.
Mm-hmm. And Simons wasn't totally isolated. There were others starting to think quantitatively. People like Harry Markowitz with portfolio theory.
And Ed Thorpe, right. The mathematician who beat Vegas and even tried early computer trading.
Exactly. Zuckerman places Simons in that vanguard. People looking at the market through this new quantitative lens, trying to find order in the chaos.
Simon's genius, though, was maybe less in inventing the idea and more in assembling the team and relentlessly automating it on a massive scale, taking it from theory to, well, reality.
Right, building the machine.
So he eventually leaves his university job at Stony Brook, takes the plunge, and starts his first proper investment fund, Limroy.
And the office setup was pretty humble, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Zuckerman describes it as this little storefront stuck between a boutique and a train station. Not exactly the image of high finance.
Hardly.
And one of his key early hires was Leonard Baum Ball, another math guy, a code breaker from the IDA.
But Baum was skeptical at first, right? About applying their math skills to something as messy as markets.
He was, according to the book, which is understandable coming from pure theory. Maybe finance seemed, I don't know, grubby. Or just too unpredictable for their tools.
Yeah, dilution of their skills, maybe. But the puzzle must have hooked him. The challenge of trying to crack that code.
It seems so. Ball got deeply involved in building a trading system. Initially, Limroy focused on currency trends.
Okay, currencies.
And here's where luck plays a part. Remember Charlie Freifeld, the guy who'd made Simons rich earlier with a sugar bet?
Vaguely, yeah. The commodities guy.
Well, sugar prices suddenly surged again, and Limroy, which had some capital from that old venture, made a killing. Simons himself apparently called it completely lucky.
That's fascinating. That early luck probably gave them crucial breathing room, maybe boosted confidence, even if it wasn't their system generating the win that time.
Definitely. But Simons admitting it was luck shows some honesty, right? He knew they needed more than just good fortune for the long haul.
True. Sustained success needed something systematic.
Exactly. Those early wins, some driven by Ball's intuition even, weren't enough for Simons. He got more and more convinced. It had to be pure math, pure algorithms, no gut feelings, no news reactions.
Moving away from intuition entirely.
Yeah. And that led him to hire James Axe, another mathematician tasked with building a fully automated trading system.
Axe. Zuckerman paints him as brilliant, but maybe a bit difficult. Complex, anyway.
Yeah, that seems right. Which probably played into how things developed later. But hiring Axe was a statement, wasn't it? Entrusting the core system to a math guy with zero Wall Street experience. Doubling down on the brain power bet.
Absolutely. It showed Simons' conviction. And Axe got a huge leg up early on, thanks to another colleague, right?
Strauss.
Yes. Strauss was apparently relentless in gathering historical price data, huge amounts of it, which wasn't easy to get back then.
And that data was gold. It let Axe actually test his models against the past, see what worked, what didn't, backtesting.
A massive advantage. Most traders then just couldn't do that systematically.
It moved them from just guessing to actually validating their ideas empirically, learning from history in a structured way.
So this leads into the Axcom years,
Yeah.
Axe's company, and initially they did really well, double-digit returns.
Using things like kernel methods and trend following.
Right, Zuckerman mentions those. Kernel methods are basically fancy math for finding complex, non-obvious patterns. Trend following is simpler, betting trends will continue.
Okay, so it was working. But tension started. Yeah, Simons wanted more, better returns, faster improvements. Axe, on the other hand, sometimes still relied on his own judgment.
Mixing intuition back in.
Apparently. Zuckerman even tells the story about Axe trying to get the next day's New York Times early to trade overnight based on the news.
Wow. That's kind of old school meets new school in a weird way.
Yeah.
Definitely not the pure quantitative approach Simons wanted.
Exactly. It highlights that philosophical clash. Simons's absolute faith in the algorithms versus Axe, sometimes hedging with traditional info or gut calls.
That conflict seems central to their evolution.
And then things nearly went completely sideways. Another firm, Stotler, collapsed unexpectedly.
Oh, right. Counterparty risk.
And Axcom had a lot of money tied up with them. They were facing near bankruptcy, basically overnight.
Yikes. How did they avoid it?
It was Strauss again. Simons gave him some very direct advice, something like, "Elwin, when you smell smoke, you get the hell out." Yeah. Strauss acted fast, pulled their funds just in time. A real close call. Shows the risks are always there, no matter how smart your models are.
Definitely a reminder that the real world can throw curveballs.
Yeah.
And Simon's advice there, very practical, despite his theoretical background.
So after that drama and the ongoing disagreements about strategy, Axcom was wound down and Renaissance Technologies was born, managing the Medallion Fund.
The famous medallion. And this is where Berlekamp comes in. Ellen Berlekamp.
Yes, at Burlam, often in the book, he was huge. He pushed for and developed a much more robust, fully automated short-term trading system.
Shifting the focus. More automation, shorter time frames.
Right. But interestingly, Zuckerman says Simons himself was still hesitant sometimes. He couldn't quite let go
So I
completely.
wanted to jump in.
Yeah, he tried to override the system, especially with gold and oil trades, apparently. Sometimes it works, sometimes not so much.
That's so human, isn't it? Trusting your own gut even when the data says otherwise. Overcoming bias is hard, even for Simons.
For sure. And ultimately, Berlekamp didn't stick around long term. He was bought out. Different visions for the fund.
But Berlekamp's push for automation seems critical for Medallion's later,
Yeah.
truly crazy returns.
Absolutely. But Simons kept building the team, even after Berlekamp left. People like Strauss, still managing the crucial data.
And Henry Laufer, Lohr, he was key in finding signals, right?
Yeah, Loefer had this knack for spotting these tiny, statistically significant patterns, subtle intraday moves, volatility shifts, how different investments related, things nobody else saw.
Fleeting signals, hard to catch.
Exactly. And their work led to this betting algorithm, basically optimizing how much to bet on each trade based on the odds their model spat out.
Smart position sizing, crucial.
And Simon's hiring was just legendary. Zuckerman tells the story about interviewing Krizmir Penevich, a PhD student.
Oh, yeah.
Simons apparently shows up looking super casual, tells Penevich his PhD work is trivial,
Oh.
but then immediately says, "I like you though," and offers him a job on the spot.
That's amazing. Clearly looking for raw brain power, not credentials or, you know, politeness.
Totally. He wanted puzzle solvers, analytical minds, not finance guys.
That philosophy seemed to work. Who
Yeah.
else came in around them?
Well, there was Nick Patterson. Zuckerman says he was really skeptical at first, thought the whole thing might even be a scam.
Really? A scam? Wow.
Yeah. But he came around and became super important, especially in tackling transaction costs.
The hidden killer of profits, the devil, they called it.
That's the term, yeah. Minimizing those costs was vital. And the whole time, the team was just constantly tweaking, refining, improving algorithms, trading faster, moving into new markets.
Never standing still, continuous improvement.
But early on, Wall Street just didn't buy it, did they? This black box run by math nerds?
No, there was huge skepticism. What do these mathematicians know about finance? That was the attitude. And Simons's high fees didn't exactly help matters.
It's a classic case of the old guard resisting disruption, isn't it? They couldn't understand it, so they dismissed it. The black box label itself sounds suspicious.
Definitely unsettling for people used to traditional methods.
But the numbers didn't lie. Medallion just kept printing money. Astonishing returns, year after year. By the 90s, gains were like 70% plus annually.
Incredible numbers. Consistent, too.
And the system got smarter. They started bringing in machine learning. The algorithms weren't just executing rules, they were learning from the data, adapting.
That's a huge leap, allowing the system itself to evolve.
Which led them to hire guys like Peter Brown and Robert Mercer from IBM's speech recognition team.
Speech recognition? How does that connect to stocks?
Right. It sounds unrelated. But they brought expertise in computational linguistics, analyzing complex sequences, finding patterns and noisy data. Skills that, it turns out, were transferable to market data.
Fascinating. Cross-pollination of ideas again.
Zuckerman notes it wasn't instant success, though. Applying those techniques to finance took work, adaptation, they hit snags.
Sure, markets aren't quite the same as language.
But they broke through. Partly thanks to Michael Medgerman finding and fixing a critical bug in their stock models.
Ah, sometimes it's just one bug holding things back.
And all this success happened under this intense cloak of secrecy. Zuckerman really stresses this. Leaking trade secrets was treated like leaking state secrets at the NSA.
Wow, that's serious. Protecting that edge was everything.
But inside, it was apparently this vibrant, intellectual place. Lots of debate, collaboration. Simons built this unique culture, attracting top scientists, giving them freedom and amazing facilities.
That culture sounds key. Fostering that intellectual firepower, that constant questioning and refinement.
Zuckerman also briefly compares Renaissance to other quant shops like LTCM, Long-Term Capital Management.
Right, the one that blew up spectacularly.
Yeah. He suggests Renaissance was more empirical, less purely theoretical than LTCM.
Yeah.
And maybe they automated more thoroughly earlier than, say, D.E. Shaw.
Subtle but important differences in approach. Renaissance grounding itself more in the data, perhaps being more adaptable when theories didn't match reality.
That seems plausible. And to really juice their returns, Renaissance used these things called basket options.
Ah, leverage. Lots of it.
Exactly. Zuckerman explains it was a way to borrow way more, take on much bigger positions than normal limits allowed, huge potential gains.
And also huge risks, right? Though maybe more for the banks lending to them.
That's the suggestion. It amplified returns massively, but also shifted some systemic risk onto the counterparties, the banks, and maybe offered Renaissance some protection if the whole market tanked. Very clever, very complex.
Sophisticated financial engineering, for sure, shows their confidence in the models.
Later on, Simons became a massive philanthropist, pouring money into math and science research, giving back to the fields that started it all for him.
Nice full circle.
And it's interesting, Zuckerman touches on how Robert Mercer, one of those key figures from IBM.
Right, Brown and Mercer.
Yeah. How Mercer later got heavily into conservative politics, funding Breitbart News, applying that same data-driven pattern-finding mindset developed at Renaissance to a completely different arena.
That's a fascinating, maybe unexpected application of those skills. Using data analytics in politics raises all sorts of questions.
It really does. Shows how powerful that way of thinking can be, for better or worse, far beyond just finance.
Eventually, people moved on. Berlekamp, Axe, Strauss. Later Brown and Mercer, too.
Right. But the impact was made. As Zuckerman shows, Jim Simons and Renaissance fundamentally changed the game, proved the power of this quantitative scientific approach to investing.
Absolutely. They showed that rigorous data-driven models run automatically could consistently beat human intuition in the market chaos. It's a legacy far beyond just Medallion Fund's returns.
Mm-hmm.
It shifted how people think about markets.
So wrapping this up for the learner listening, what are the big takeaways here from the man who solved the market?
Well, first, definitely the power of applying rigorous thinking, math, science to unexpected areas.
Right. Don't stay in your lane necessarily. Second, the value of bringing diverse minds together, interdisciplinary collaboration.
Crucial. Third, data rules. Making decisions based on evidence, not just gut feel, objective analysis.
And fourth, maybe never stop innovating. Always adapt, always challenge assumptions, even when you're winning.
Exactly. Simons' story proves amazing expertise can come from anywhere. Unexpected places, unconventional backgrounds.
So here's a final thought to chew on. Renaissance had this incredible success using data and models in finance. It makes you wonder.
Yeah.
What other big, messy, seemingly unsolvable problems out there, maybe in things like healthcare or climate change or social issues, could benefit from that same kind of rigorous, data-driven, interdisciplinary approach?
That's a great question. Where else could that kind of thinking lead to breakthroughs we haven't even imagined yet? Makes you think, doesn't it?
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.